To see examples of what we talked about on this episode, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to
Two Dimension Podcast,
the comic book podcast
with no direction.
What's up, everybody? You know that song. You know this voice. That's right. It's Rook. Joining me, as always, is the man himself. Everybody say hi. It's Don.
Hello.
All right. And today we've got a very special guest coming to us from Massachusetts. Everybody say hello to Mel Cartagena.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for having me.
Hey, thank you so much for sending us your book. Awesome stuff. Got a lot I want to ask about different things with this book. First off, I just want to know, where did you come up with the concept? What brought you to this book?
Okay, so I love conspiracy theories. I don't particularly believe in them, but I find that stuff fascinating. Not any specific one, just the field of conspiracy theories as a whole, because when you look into that, you can always find these little real-world parallels in that you can find connections to real people. When you start investigating, say, you know, JFK or the lizard people, you always find these little parallels that kind of get you excited, get you, like, curious. But then it kind of goes off into this sort of fantasy place. But then something else comes up from the real world again. Like, if you were to, like, you know how people put that chart, that crime family chart thing on the wall?
Yeah.
You can find these connections to people and places. But it never quite connects to it. And at the same time, it's frustrating, but it kind of keeps spurring you on. It keeps spurring you on. So that was one aspect of it. I love conspiracy theories. I love old tech. So I like the, how would I say? Okay, I miss the sound of dial-up. Remember when you had to, like, dial up and
you had that cool
little sound that it made? I love that sound. So I like the idea of saying, okay, that sound, it's like the signal for the sleeper assassin to go into action. You know, like, again, that's another conspiracy theory about how there's, like, sleeper agents who are planted from decades ago. They live in the country. They, you know, they look like a normal person. But one day, someone says a word, and it triggers them, and they go into, like, killer mode. And I love that stuff. So I just took all these elements together, and I put that story together.
Man, fantastic. I love it. And yes, the dial-up noise, definitely. Funny story with that. I actually have a rotary phone hanging in my house off of a long-running joke with a bunch of bar buddies. When we walk into a bar and the Wi-Fi in the bar just was horrid, so we're making fun of it, and we all start making the dial-up noise. Girl walks up and goes, "What are you guys doing?" And of course, being who I am, I start explaining dial-up to what turns out to be a 19-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow, yeah.
I'm just like, no, I gotta go. Good, no. So, yeah. So I gotta ask you, in the first part of this book, I noticed that you reuse panels. You reuse art a lot. Yeah. And the way that they were questioning the character, the book is called The Plot.
Yes.
We open up with the main character in an interrogation room with these group standing there, going, just repeatedly asking him, was reusing the art to get that repetition, that kind of, like, pounding repetition, was that on purpose?
Yes, a little bit. The whole repetition thing comes from, I don't know if you guys ever had any experiences with law enforcement, but when a cop stops you, like, the way they'll ask you questions, and no matter what you say, however inoffensive or harmless it sounds, they always kind of twist it into something suspicious. So it came from that, you know, from the times that I've been stopped because I happen to look like someone else or anything like that. That's how they always treat you. Anything you say, no matter how inane, how pointless it is, they always kind of twist it into something suspicious. They always try to make it seem something that should be looked into and magnified. So that comes from that. The panels themselves come from, I guess that's the other part of the story, in that I how would I say this? I had done a bunch of artwork And originally, it was just artwork that had action only. There was no dialogue on it. And I kind of put it aside. I made some short films with some friends and all that. Hmm. And I kind of forgot about the artwork. But, the impulse to do a full-length comic has always been there. I've always wanted to do that. Then lockdown happens. And I kind of pull up the artwork again. And I start looking at it. And I take all these ideas that I mentioned earlier. And I start kind of seeing patterns. There. Okay, wait. Like, maybe there's something here. So, let me try this. Like, I would photocopy parts. And then I would just kind of lay one and take a little post-it, and I would write something. Then I would take a copy of one of the MIBs, and he would ask a question. And then I could see a pattern emerging, that resembles this thing, like what cops do when they stop you and they just keep asking you questions. Like, so I could keep this going and keep this going. And then gradually start introducing the other element. And it was almost like I had a story all that time, but I didn't notice. This artwork is from 2019, maybe early, late 2018 to mid-2019. I kind of did it in parts. Like, I would do a few pages. Then I kind of ran out of ideas. Like, I couldn't see it. Then I would pick it up again. But interesting, I didn't think I had a full story there, but then lockdown happens. And I guess lockdown, we've all been changed by that, by the pandemic. That all changes. So it did something to my brain where all of a sudden I look at all this artwork, and wait, I have something here. I do have a story here. And then I do repeat panels, which feels a bit like cheating, but I've seen some comics where they do that, like more experimental comics. Like something I Speak on Them would do, or like, I'm trying to think of someone. I want to say Robert Crumb, but that's not quite accurate. But I know that some cartoonists do that. Well, they take the same art or the same image. By putting different dialogue, they actually change the meaning of the thing.
Yes.
It's a little bit almost like Sergei Eisenstein, the filmmaker who had that theory of how you influence the viewer by juxtaposing images. Okay. By juxtaposing certain images in the middle, having this particular face, let's say a face. But there's no change in the face, but by the images that are before and after, you already influenced the viewer. So I was like, I kind of experimented with that. So it was a bit of an experiment, essentially.
Yeah.
It was a bit of an experiment, but then I kind of weaved in all these things that I love to in fiction, or in pop culture, and more accurate.
Right. Yeah. That was really popular in the early 80s, was repetition. Like you said, short films, and in comic books. Michael T. Gilbert used to do it all the time. Mike Sines used to do it all the time. And Andy Warhol did it all the time in his experimental films and some of his art. I really liked it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but that was a popular thing, and it's exactly what you said. Sometimes you can have the same image, change the dialogue, and it changed. One question, how did you do the drawings?
I guess I'm not a very good artist, I'll admit to that, but I'm like, there's that pressure to do something, so right. I just kind of did the best I could. But the actual materials used, I used Canson mixed media paper.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would just simply, regular number 2 pencil for the artwork. Then I have these pencils called sketch and wash pencil. Like, you can use it dry or wet. And what it does is when you mix the different intensities, it produces gray wash, but you can apply a lot so it can get really, really dark.
Right.
Or you can just a little bit, or kind of take away a little bit, and it's softer. So I created gray wash, and it's one of the things people comment. There's something sort of like they like the gray wash look. They like that.
Yeah.
I guess I don't really know how to use color. I actually, that's one thing that I've been putting off. I know that I've been putting off learning how to use color. But on the next comic, I hope to fix that. But essentially, that was part of the reason. I don't really understand color. So I felt that if I did something in color, it might distract the eyeball. Because I noticed that in certain comics, people use color, but they don't really know how to use color to sort of guide your eye to where they need to.
Yeah.
And the result is, I don't know if you have that experience, you read a comic and you're like, you're almost exhausted because there's just so much.
Yeah.
You don't know which way to look, and you kind of get tired. And the result is that you kind of stop reading because you sort of give up. You sort of get tired. You get frustrated.
You end up zoning into the imagery instead of the story, and you just kind of lose focus. You did use some color, and I think some very key points in the story.
Yeah.
So, and I think, you know, the wash look, the almost watercolor esque black and gray look that you did through the book, I think makes a great tone. It keeps a good tone to the storyline. And then when you do the splash of color on certain pieces, on certain pages, it kind of emphasizes. So, you know, I wouldn't take that away. Don't take away the lack of color from yourself, because I think you did quite well on adding color where it needed to pop and it needed to draw attention to things. So,
I forgot about that. Yeah, there's a little splash of color there towards that moment. But thank you so much. I guess I was also tapping into a little bit into film noir, because I love film noir. Like, I love, like, that cinematography, that black and white, almost no gray, like just hard black and white. Kind of, I guess, what Frank Miller does in Sin City. Like, I love that. I love that look.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to do that, because I feel like I can't do that. I cannot do what Frank Miller did. But I figured, well, I can do this. This is doable, you know. Like, I always feel like comics in this case, but there's something that you really want to do something. Just do the best you can at that moment, you know. Like, your skills will only get you up to that level, but after that, you will have more skills, so the next thing will be better.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than, like, waiting years and years, like, no, dive in, which I did. You know, like I said, I did this artwork, and then I kind of put it aside, and I came back to it, and I have something here. Like, I could have probably done this maybe a couple of years ago if I just simply kept going, just kept pushing and kept pushing.
Well, and
so that's one thing that changed, I guess, after lockdown, in that I changed the way I go about that. Like, I feel like life is short, so, you know, get it done, do it, just keep going.
There you go. Yes, absolutely. That's something that we've referenced quite a bit since a conversation with somebody else last year. You know, just do it. Just get it out there. You know, you have a love, you have a passion for it. Just go for it. And, you know, I got to commend you. You went for it, and you know, the artwork is not, you know, you're not looking at, like, you know, Frank Miller artwork. You're not looking at, you know, you're looking at the art of somebody who did it because he loved it and he got it done. And, you know, like I said, the splashes, you know, you took away from yourself for a minute there, but the splashes where you put in the color for the delivery truck, for the end of the scene in the park, absolutely, you know, it popped. It gave it that pop at that moment where you need to draw the eye to the certain areas and get kind of people to understand that this is a thing, especially at the end through the crosshairs.
I love that in movies also. Like, I don't know if you guys are fans of, like, older movies. Like, I feel the headman has sort of become a cliche in, you know, in current movies now, but in the 70s, I love that thing. And I love old, like, old school posters and posters where you have, like, the crosshairs, like, the human factor, or, like, the mechanic. Well, the mechanic, I don't think, does the mechanic have one? You're the Charles Bronson movie? I cannot remember, but I love to see that. There's something so inspired when you see something in the crosshairs. Like, I guess I was drawing inspiration from that, from men's action adventure paperbacks of the 70s and 60s. Yeah. Like, I love that stuff. Like, that has some influence. Like, I love that stuff.
Okay.
Very much about that. Yeah, there is a bit of a terror when you start putting stuff out there, but because, you know, you're working and you're doing things in a little vacuum, up in your little space, and then, you know, you're kind of isolated, and it starts warping your mind, and you're thinking, oh man, this is amazing. And then when you start reaching out to people, putting it out there, it's like, oh, you're like, oh my God. So it's really, really comforting. So thank you so much, guys. I mean, that is so, it's relieving and reassuring and comforting and encouraging. You know, like, I want to do better. And the next one, I want to do even more.
Good. Okay, one thing, Mel. Let's clear something up. 1970s isn't old. If you want to go to old movies and old posters, it's the 50s and the 40s. But the 60s isn't old, and the 70s is just the other day, okay? I understand you guys are both young, but I still see things from the 70s as the other day, like they're still contemporary. But I appreciate what you said. just so, what I want
to
give.
Say that because when it comes to consuming material, like I prefer that stuff. I actually kind of like how movies. First of all, I love the film. Like I love 35mm, 16mm from the 70s, 60s, 80s. Like I love that look. I like how movies were made. Like movies have stuff happening. Like movies have more. How would I describe more stuff happening per unit of time? Like if you watch a 90-minute movie or a 100-minute movie, stuff was happening. I feel like movies now are these kind of rickety constructs made up of like references, callbacks, winks, nudges, and product placement. Like I really haven't been to the movie theater since February 2020 when I went to see Parasite. And it's kind of sad, but I really don't miss the movie, going to the movie theater. I really don't miss it. I love Tubi. Like, I don't know if you guys are into Tubi, but you talk about the 70s, like, that place, man. It's like they made that platform just for me. It was just filled with all that stuff that I love.
No, we talk about that.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, it's fine. I discovered YouTube, and Tubi, Crackle, all those. I'm watching old sitcoms and old movies on streaming. It's nice. I still like going to the movies. I don't go all the time. But here in Tampa, where we, you know, the area we live, they have an old theater called Tampa Theater that's built in the 20s. And they show silent films. Every time they do that, I always tell my wife, they're showing Metropolis. I'd really like to go see it. And my wife's like,
oh, wow.
She says,
awesome.
Are they, is it black and white? I said, yes, it's silent too. And nothing but stone look. But I had explained to her that they have a organist there because they were silent movies, and you get to see the organist. And after that, we've seen several. They do it once in a while. I love the movie theater experience. Sometimes I like to go, even if it's a movie I have no interest in. But no, I still enjoy it. But I do like watching the old movies. And the stuff you're talking about in the 70s, the big change was they stopped dressing people up. You know, when you watch movies from even the 60s, especially the 50s and the 40s, they were almost sculpting people with makeup and clothes and lighting. The stuff in the 70s was almost like making documentaries of people on the street, you know, which had a charm to it as well. But the one thing I found...
Absolutely,
The one thing I liked about your work the most, I enjoyed the drawings. It had a noir feel to it. I liked how you added white highlights to stuff. But what caught me, I read this when you sent it to us. You know, I was wanting to be familiar with it, so I read the thing through. And then I read it a second time a couple of days ago to prepare for this show. I liked the storytelling, which is something that anybody that's tried to do their own comic... Most of the time, you concentrate on the drawing. You know, that's what you're thinking. You're not thinking about telling an interesting story. And a lot of people, I always refer to this as talking heads. It's one head on one panel, another on the other end of the panel, just talking to each other. It gets really monotonous. The way you put this together, even if it was reusing some of the same drawings, it kept my interest. You told a story, and it felt intense. Sometimes you blow things up, you know, and the three men interrogating the main character, I found disturbing. And it was raising my pulse. I was getting a little upset. And then as the story goes on, all of a sudden, everything you knew kind of turns around. The storytelling, when you're talking about film work, it's a different approach than what a lot of comic books do. It was an interesting, again, I can't stress, an interesting storytelling technique that's a lot different than a lot of other stuff I've read.
Well, I want to ask you guys both, can you guess who those guys in suits are?
Well,
I mean, they were reminiscent of, I want to call it Terror Inc. I can't remember exactly. I was trying to listen, I've been home for about like 45 minutes before we got on because it's been a crazy day, and I wanted to try and
okay,
find
no
this.
Worries.
But, I mean, they're obviously like some kind of like Men in Black, some kind of like secret organization.
You got it. That's it. It's Men in Black. Yeah, it's the other aspect of conspiracy theories. Men in Black. I love that stuff because the original Men in Black. It's a book from the 1950s. I think it's David Gray or Gray David. A book called "They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers." I want to say 1957.
I don't know.
But
that.
I think that is the first time that that these people are referred to as Men in Black.
Mm.
And what, you know, in pop culture, the way Men in Black have been interpreted, I love that because they're terrifying. There's something the way they're described. But then Hollywood took that and made that, you know, Men in Black with Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones. And nothing wrong with that. Like, that's a fun movie, but it took away what made the Men in Black fascinating. So yeah. I was hoping to make that, again, a scary thing. I was hoping to make it, you know, a terrifying experience. And, yeah, the interview, I guess I wanted to have, like, a bit of a roller coaster. Like, it kind of levels off. Then it kind of peaks again. Then it kind of ebbs. Then it starts building again. Then it kind of peaks. So thank you so much, Don. I guess from your reaction, it sounds like I accomplished that.
Oh, yeah.
It comes from that. When you talk to police, they do that. They fuck with you. They keep messing with your mind. They kind of reassure you, then they start turning the tail fucking on you. Then they start fucking with you again. Like, it's kind of like that. It's a bit like that. It feels like that.
The military does the same thing when they're interrogating. It's an interrogating technique. They're trying to find you to slip up on your story.
So does the FBI.
Oh, yeah.
I've been interviewed by the FBI.
Wow, you've been
me too.
It was unpleasant.
Wow.
Yeah. It's really fun looking back on it, but it wasn't at the time. I've got one that just keeps asking the same questions, and then the other one just stares at you blankly the whole time, just staring, not saying a word. So, yeah, I got a lot of that feel reading through this, the memories of that incident.
Wow. Hopefully I didn't trigger, like, flashbacks or anything that keeps you awake at night now.
It's a long, convoluted story that we won't even go into, and I was not the one that they were looking for.
Oh, wow. After all that, it wasn't you.
It was a whole lot of stupid back in college, and somebody decided to make an idiot of themselves, and, you know, here I am having to be interviewed by FBI agents sitting there going, I don't know what you're talking about. The repetitive questioning and, you know, trying to get you to say what they need you or want you to say was very present in the first part of this of the book. So, yeah, that really stood out. And then how it starts unfolding, because I don't want to give anything away, because I really want people. We'll have the links on our page for everybody to be able to go and check out the book. You know, it's definitely something that I really would encourage everybody to check out. You know, you're definitely now. This is your first book, right?
It's my first attempt at a full length. Yeah, I've done some short pieces, like a couple of short comic book form essays, really, really short story. But this is the first time that I go for that, and I'm very pleased with the results, judging by the feedback. I knew other people that have, over the next few weeks, you're going to talk to other podcasters, and it's really very encouraging. So it's a bit of a relief, like I said, because it's, wow, when you put something out there and after you've been for months on your own little space, so it's very, very encouraging, very encouraging. Yeah. So I'm like, man, I can't wait to do this. I'm looking forward to diving in and doing it again.
No, I definitely think you've got stories to tell, and, you know, this is a great point for people to jump in, get familiar with your work, and just keep their eye out for you in the future, definitely. So, I really encourage everybody to keep their eyes open and, you know, go and check this out. Like I said, the link is going to be on our page for everybody to be able to see it.
That's awesome. A question
thank
to have.
You very much, guys.
How are you making this available for the public to read?
For the moment, it's just a link on Gumroad. I'm basically just giving it away because I'm just building a fan base. Like, I'm just simply, you know, gathering people who would like this and kind of bringing almost like a little family thing. Like, if you guys like this, you know, I have other ideas, because I'm not so much a cartoonist. I consider myself to be more a writer who makes comics, because I'm very interested in, I may have said, I apologize if I'm repeating myself. I'm very interested in audio drama. I love the idea of telling stories where sound is the, you know, the primer, the sound. Because I love that. I love both the old ones and the new ones. Because there's people now doing it online. People who just write and learn to record and do it themselves and come up with some really clever, impressive stuff. I love a film. Like, I wanted to make a movie for years, but I don't have, like, I'm not surrounded by people who want to just dive in and do it. Like, you know, don't worry about if it's bad. Just let's just go through for the experience. Just do it. I don't have that, so I'm doing this instead. It's like, okay, I can't get a movie made because I don't have people, so let me do this. Let me try audio drama. Let me try comics. Like, so it's more about just storytelling in all the forms available.
Nice. What can you tell me about Flat Town?
Okay, Flat Town. It's a little bit like the original X-Files.
Okay.
I'm only going to say that right now. But it's a bit like that. It's like a city that maybe happens to be along ley lines that crisscross the globe. So, you know, from downtown Lowell, which is where I live, there could be a ley line that happens to go all the way through Stonehenge and back again all the way across the ocean. And because of that, you have these frequencies where things happen sometimes. I finished a website recently. If you guys want, I can send you a link to that. There's nothing on it, but when the weather changes, when it gets better here, I got some ideas that I want to try. So it'll be fun to do stuff with video and editing as well.
Yeah, I went to it. I found it the other day, and I was impressed, but I was disappointed there wasn't anything on it. It looks nice. And
oh, you mean the website?
Yeah. Yeah. Welcome to Flat Town.
Oh, okay.
Is that the one?
Did I send you the website?
You didn't send it to me, but I looked it up anyway.
Oh, wow.
And,
that's so crazy. But, no. I mean, the internet is like that. But I'll send you guys a website just so you can have it, because, you know, in time, part of it is the reason that I don't have people who are just with that let's do it attitude. Let's just, you know, gung-ho attitude.
Right.
But I'm using social media differently now, so maybe, who knows, maybe through you guys, I may find people who, I'm interested in participating in this. What could I do? Like, well, get in touch with Melvin, you know, something like that.
The information will be on the blog. Everything we talk about, we always have links and images, so you can see the images on here. We'll have links if you would like to read the plot, and if you'd like to see more of Flat Town. And one thing about doing comics, do you read comics? Have you read them as a kid, or do you read them now?
I read them as a kid. I kind of got out of it in my teens.
Yeah.
I got back into it in my 20s, and I love it. Like, I like now there's more room, you know, because of technology and because of the market changing. There's a lot more room, because while I like comics, I'm not exactly the biggest fan of superhero comics, like, especially not when we're just being bombarded with everything from the MCU to. So I love stuff that is different, that is even maybe a little edgy and dangerous. And one of my favorites, actually, are you guys familiar with Matt Kine? I'm not sure if I'm saying his last name properly.
I don't read him, but I am somewhat familiar with him. I know a lot of people love the work.
Yeah, so I'm one of those people. Like, I discovered him a few years ago with a comic called Pistol Whip.
Yeah.
And first of all, he kind of gave me that idea that, okay, the artwork doesn't need to be stellar. Because his artwork, I wouldn't consider it great, but the storytelling is so clever and inventive. And his themes are, like, right up my alley. Science fiction, alternate identities, alternate realities, espionage. Like, I love all that stuff. Like, that stuff just fascinates me. And he kind of covers those themes, and he makes really interesting stuff. So he is one of the ones that I would say is influencing what I'm doing, and, you know, that I'll carry that over into Flat Town as well.
Right.
Nice.
What are some other books, titles that you liked?
Okay,
I don't mean to put you on the spot.
South America. There is a title. I guess we lost him. It's weird. It's just suddenly. There was no build-up leading to that. But in the 60s and 70s, I'm trying to remember the name now. I'm not going to be looking at my books now so I can get. In the 60s and 70s, there was a writer-artist team in Argentina. And they created this science fiction story called, in English, it's The Eternaut, or El Eternauta. And it's a story about how these aliens come to Argentina, to a neighborhood in Argentina. And first they drop the snow, which is like radioactive and kills people. And then they start the process of physically invading the town. And there's a little group of people, a neighborhood, that bands together, and they start pushing back the invasion. It's fantastic in terms of storytelling. But one thing that, for me, first of all, seeing such like a high caliber original science fiction originating from a Latin American country, because all I know of science fiction is just, you know, Ray Bradbury, Harlan Ellison, people like that, and that's cool. But it was just awesome to see this fantastic work of fiction by two Latin American author and artist. And the comic, not known in the States, but in South America, it's huge. It's like almost on the level of, say, Frank Miller in the United States. And it's become so influential that the central character, he has become this iconic figure. Like, if you ever feel like looking it up and you want me to send you links to it, because it's out in Fantagraphics in English, so you can buy it. And if you're interested in that, you can check it out. But the main character, he improvises a suit, like a sort of hazmat suit out of a wetsuit. And this character and the story have become a symbol for resistance against invasion. So if you want to look it up, let's say in a favela in Brazil, you'll see a graffiti of the Eternaut. In a neighbor in France, in one of the rougher neighbors in France, you'll see a graffiti drawing of the Eternaut. Right. He's become this international symbol for resistance against foreign forces. So that is one that I love a lot. I love Wally Wood's canon.
Yes.
Have you ever heard that?
Yeah, I've got some of that.
So I love to see that because first of all, it's a secret agent. The story is like bonkers, insane. But one aspect that I don't know, like, how you guys feel about this, if I'm saying too much or what, but in Wally Wood's work, there was always like a little hint of perversion, like a little perverbiness there.
A lot of perversion.
Sort of pushed back to the edges.
Yeah.
Well, Ken was made for the military. It was something that was only published in basis. So it's for adults. So Wally Wood just completely let out the perversion, and it is amazing to see that. It is so like both like fascinating and like a little cringe inducing to see it. That I love to see that. I love to sort of like see that full blown neurosis just lit out on the page.
Right.
The artwork is fantastic, and it's just so insane. Like, there is like fighting. There's sex. There is war, and it's all happening like within like a page, or sometimes in three or four panels, and that just boggles my mind. Like, this is amazing, but it's also like insane. Like, but I love that. I love like someone who's not afraid to hold back, someone who's not afraid to just go for it, just go for the jugular. And Wally Wood does that.
Yeah.
And let me see who else. Joe Kubert. I like everything Joe Kubert has done outside of superhero comics.
Yes.
Like Jew Gangster, Facts from Sarajevo, which is just amazing stuff, and it's based on a true story. So those are just some of what I can tell you. Then there's the American comics like Frank Miller, Will Eisner, for example. Like, Will Eisner is the master storyteller, stellar. I like some of Alan Moore. And those are some of the ones that I can think of right now. I can't think of any other media, but I'm sure
that's a good
some of your own.
That's a powerful group.
That's a good range of comics.
That's awesome.
You got old and new.
So what's next as far as, you know, obviously you're working on Flat Town. Are you planning on doing another comic book as well? Something comic book to go along with Flat Town? Or is Flat Town going to be more video work than anything else?
I want to do both. I would love to do another comic book. I want to do Flat Town. And, you know, because being limited in time and resources, I'm thinking, how can I combine both? How can I, like, maybe make myself a character in Flat Town who's a cartoonist so I can somehow get both things done at the same time? But speaking of what's next, I want to ask you guys a question, both of you. Oh, Christ, I forgot now what one question was. Well, okay, since you guys both like the plot, would you be interested in seeing a film version of the plot? Like, if there was a short film of the plot, would you be interested in seeing?
Yeah, I would.
Okay. After talking to you, I kind of almost expect it, honestly.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So
the way you talk about cinema and everything about it, I kind of expect it from you.
Okay, so do you guys have a Twitch stream by any chance?
No, we do have. My son actually works on Twitch. Quick plug, Skeleton Waffle Live. Everybody go check him out. But our show does not have a Twitch stream currently.
Okay, so the reason why I asked, because I did make a short film of the plot, and I want to try to put together a screening. And one of the people who participated, who did the voiceover, because essentially it's the panels. So I use an app that generates a little bit of movement, and then I did a little bit of paper cut stop motion to generate some movement. And then I have voice people doing, you know, the characters. And one of the people who participated, who plays one of the Men in Black, it's not spoilery to say that, he wants to put a screening together. And I'm like, I like the idea, but I would like to get, you know, a decent sized number of people to watch that. So that's why I was asking you, because I would love to see if I can maybe get a sizable number of people to tune into Twitch. But I guess failing that, what other platforms do you guys have that maybe we could do a screening then, and maybe you guys can invite some of your friends to watch a screening of that?
Well, quite honestly, we're just now starting to expand. We've been doing the podcast for how long, Don?
Yeah, 10 years. 10 years.
Wow.
Years. We're starting to now expand with some YouTube videos and things like that. So we're just now starting to get into other media stuff.
Okay. Okay. Well, we'll work it out. Yeah, because I'm judging by what you guys told me, I'm interested to see if you would make a short film based on that, because the short film was also a little experiment. It was an experiment in seeing if you combine images with sound, do you see movement, even though there really isn't movement, or at least there's not a lot of movement, it's just partial movement. But I'm interested in, again, in seeing people's reactions to that. I want to see what how that works in people's eyes and ears. So that is one thing that I'm doing.
Effect of video where it's not actually moving, but you perceive movement just because it's going from frame to frame in a video style. Even if something
and the sound also would maybe enhance that feeling, like the two things combined to create this third thing in your brain, because comics work the same way. Comics, you don't put detail, you put enough detail so that the viewer assembles the details in their heads. You know, like you look at a few lines and you'll say, oh, that's a face. You know, like some comic book artists are like that. They're very minimalist.
Yeah.
But there is enough information here for you to look at, oh, okay, there's like a fight scene, or there's somebody crying, or there's like a pretty girl, something like that. So I was trying that with this thing. And again, judging from your reaction, I'm really eager to see what you guys would think of that, to see what you think of that kind of thing, if I add that dimension of sound.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I would definitely be interested in checking that out, because, like I said, your work very much lends itself to the idea of creation of something more in film. And obviously you have a great love for classic film. Sorry, Don. Classic film.
You're trolling again.
No, I love messing with them all the time. So, so you know, I can definitely see where you would move into something like that with this storyline, and with the Flat Town stuff. I could see where, you know, you're talking about that being video, but I can see that your love for doing things comic wise could also, you know, work in both medias with Flat Town as well. So. Yeah, I can definitely see where you're going with some of this stuff, and it's interesting. It would be awesome to watch you move.
Yes.
Oh, thank you. No, that's great. Yeah, like I said, I'm all about building a fan base, so I'm really glad that you guys have made the time to talk to me today, and your reaction is very encouraging. Like I said, like, oh man, I want to take this to the next level on the next one. Like, how can I do that? How can I make it even more scary? How can I make it even more more fun, more, I don't know, make you laugh, maybe, or not to scare you so much, because horror has a thin line. I don't know how you guys feel about horror, but you can only scare for so long before you numb someone. You have to kind of balance that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, there's a difference. I'm a huge horror fan. There's a huge difference in modern horror film compared to what we used to see. You know, I call modern horror film just gore porn. It's just just blood and guts and dismemberment, and you know, it's like there's no like. You know, sitting on the edge of your seat, feeling uncomfortable, and you know, yes. You know.
I'm totally with you. I understand because I feel the same. I don't really watch many modern horror movies, but I love 60s and 70s horror because of the same reason. It's like a slow burn. It's like a sustained tension buildup that keeps building and building. And I am a fan of that because you know that stays with you after the movie is over. That stays with you. Like it gives you anxiety. It gives you. It's something that changes, you know. Horror changes you. Horror should be, I almost compare horror to a religious experience. It should change you. It should leave you, when you're done with it, you should be changed. You should be different.
Yeah, you should feel a bit uncomfortable or a bit relieved that you got through it, you know. But what I was saying about the Alien movie, the original Alien movie, there's a 12 seconds where the alien reaches out, and that is the most frightening part of that entire movie, where he's crawling through the duct and the alien reaches out for him. And other than that, you don't really get big shock and awe crazy in that movie, you know, but that 12 seconds of frame where the alien reaches out as he's crawling through the ductwork is just the most uncomfortable, unsettling piece of that entire movie, in my opinion.
Which movie was this? I couldn't hear what you said the first part when you said the title.
The original Ridley Scott Alien.
Yeah.
Oh, Aliens. Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, that is a master exercise in suspense. That movie is just
the
amazing.
Original,
just
very sustained,
like, tension. Yes. Yeah. No, it's fantastic. Yeah, and 70s movies, horror movies, like, there are some amazing stuff there. Like, there was one, for example, with Oliver Reed called them. Oliver Reed and Karen Black, Burnt Offerings, fantastic, fantastic.
Yeah.
That everything you described, you'll experience in that movie.
Yeah,
I don't want to say more because I don't know how you guys are for time. So.
So we want to make sure that everybody gets a chance to find you on the internet. Where are all of your social medias? Where can everybody find you and check out your work?
Okay, I am most busy on Twitter. Now, my Twitter handle is @RoboPulp, all one word. Robo as in robot, pulp as in pulp fiction, RoboPulp. Mm-hmm. I recently created an Instagram that's robo.pulp. I don't have anything there because I plan to use that when I start doing more flatland stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What else? I have the website, which is Welcome to Flatland, but again, there's really nothing there other than links to social media. And that is it. That is really where I am at now. Twitter is the best place to find me. I'm very busy there. That's where I'm actually. I can't remember. That's where I found you guys. I cannot remember how I found you. Do you guys have a Twitter?
No.
It gets cross-posted from my Instagram.
Oh.
So you may have found us on Twitter that way. excuse me. So there is some Twitter work off of my Instagram, but we're mostly Facebook. The horror that Facebook is.
Yeah. Well, what is happening? Can you tell me what your Insta is? I'm gonna look you up on Insta so I can look you up there.
It's Rook Murphy.
Rook Murphy.
Yep. Mostly you're going to see a lot of pictures of D&D, miniatures, and dogs.
Nothing wrong with dogs. It's always, dogs are always the best. Dogs are just, never get tired of seeing dogs on social media. Awesome. Yeah, so Twitter is my most busy platform, but I intend to start using Insta, so we probably will connect there eventually. And in time, I would like to do more with the website. I'm not really sure what, but as the series unfolds, you know, then from there I'll know better what to do. As Flatland unfolds, more comics unfold, that would be the best. Twitter is the best platform for right now. Anybody who wants to hook up will connect with me.
All right. Well, very nice. Like I said, he's made his comic available for everybody to read. It'll be on the blog. So if you like, I would recommend checking it out. I really found it interesting how you put it together. A lot of times when people attempt to do comics, that's completely lost. Anyway, you can follow him on Twitter if you want to join in on some project with him. He's put himself out there. So, Mel, thank you very much for making the time to come on with us and sharing your project with you. I honestly really enjoyed it quite a bit.
Thank you so much, man. That is such an awesome thing to hear. It's so encouraging. So, like, oh, man. And so, yeah, it's just great. It's just, what can I say, guys? Thank you from the bottom of my heart, man. I really appreciate that you made time for me.
Anytime.
Guys, you can check us out, of course, at BunchDorks.com. Just click on that Cyclops. Check out our YouTube videos. Also go and check out Skeleton Waffle live on Twitch as he game plays through various different things. Who knows what he's playing now? Skeleton Waffle live. Check him out. Don't forget, you can buy our t-shirts with the Cyclops on it. A couple different designs and colors available for you. Everybody, until next time,
read more
comics.
Woohoo! You can hear our most recent 20 episodes on iTunes. If you would like to hear our older episodes, you can find them on our blog. Just go to bunchofdorks.com and click on the Cyclops.
Joe Dimension can be found on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe, rate, leave a review, tell a friend, or like us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.